Good afternoon. No, see, it threw me off. Good morning still. I am going to get the, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Welcome to the meeting of the Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee. The meeting is called to order. Rachel, would you please call the roll?
Committee Vice Chair Athas. Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
He's outside the door.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Tim Moore.
Here.
Trustee Leland Strom.
Present.
Board Chair Eric Wazowicz.
Here.
Committee Chair Veronica Herrera.
Here. Thank you. Mr. Perry, would you please confirm that appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Good morning, Madam Chair. You have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we have a quorum of trustees present and in person for today's committee meeting. May I have a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
Madam Chair, so moved. Gales.
Thank you, Trustee Gales, or Vice Chair Gales, sorry. Can I have a second?
Second, Barsima.
Thank you, Trustee Barsima. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Next we have, I need to ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
So move, Wazowicz.
Thank you, Chair Wazowicz. A second?
Second, Gales.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gales. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'll abstain from the vote. I was not present at that meeting.
Thank you. All in favor? All opposed? Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Motion passes. Next, we have agenda item 5, which is chair's comments and announcements. And I want to welcome any, first I'd like to welcome any university advisory committee member that would like to speak. Any comments?
No comments.
Thank you. Well, good morning. It is really wonderful to be here with you all today. I think we're all still really impressed, at least I am, with the presentation we had in the previous committee, which I think also overlaps with the work of our committee. So it was really wonderful to see that presentation. And I take pride in being able to report on the continued successes of our sponsored programs administration, or as we like to refer to it, SPA. Over the last, because it feels like such a spa, right? Over the last quarter, research funding increased significantly, and I would like to thank all of the staff and faculty who have contributed to that effort. Also, I was delighted to learn that Associate Vice President for SPA, Dara Little, recently received the Hartford Nicholson Award. This award was presented by the Society of Research Administrators International and recognizes members who have made major distinguishable contributions that benefit the entire society and who demonstrate excellent leadership. Please join me, yes, in an applause. We're so proud, and I'm not surprised at all. I mean, we've been watching how the awards have really been increasing year over year, so this is very well deserved, and just congratulations and thank you for your service. And we look forward to hearing your report later in the meeting. Another point of pride for NIU is the collaboration with Connected Nation Internet Exchange Points, LLC, which we heard about earlier this morning in the FACFO meeting. This is an exciting opportunity for NIU and surrounding communities to enhance digital benefits while closing the digital divide. Finally, members of the NIU senior leadership today will present information about their recent big picture meeting with the Illinois Board of Higher Education. The theme of this year's meeting was a thriving Illinois higher education paths to equity, sustainability, and growth. We look forward to learning more about the themes and growth strategies presented, including how we can leverage the Illinois Innovation Network to support that focus. And next, we'll move to public comment. We recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Perry, have we received any timely requests to address this meeting?
Madam Chair, we have no public comment this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. At this point, then, I would like to ask Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, Dr. Yvonne Harris, for news items and comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rero. As you noted earlier, I would also like to highlight the research funding for this quarter and provide more details about the work of Associate Vice President Dara Little. Research funding surged 121% this past quarter, and I would be remiss not to recognize AVP Little for her hard work and dedication to the division and NIU. Not only do we recognize this work at NIU division, but this past July, Dara was named president-elect for the Society of Research Administrators International and currently sits on the board of directors. We appreciate Dara providing the opportunity to have a voice for emerging research institutions like NIU and other R2s on a national and international scale. We understand she has already begun some of this work with SRAI, and this is especially important given the availability of resources at an R1 in comparison to other types of research institutions. Thank you again, Associate Vice President Little. Next, we would like to announce that Associate Professor and Director of the Institute for the Study of Environment, Sustainability, and Energy, Tom Skazinski, has been named Chairperson of the Illinois Innovation Network Research and Collaboration Working Committee. The committee seeks out collaborative research partnerships throughout IIN, with particular emphasis on topics that are critical and beneficial to the state of Illinois. Former Vice President Blasey helped to forge our relationship with IIN and other state and national organizations, and I'm happy to continue to advocate and serve as the point person for connecting NIU to this important network. Thank you, Dr. Skazinski, for your continued collaboration with the IIN. Finally, NIU chemistry professor, Dr. Tao Li. Professor Li is a member of a new center at the U.S. Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratory. This center is making a major research push toward the decarbonization of steelmaking. The center's charge is to develop an innovative and low-cost process that would replace blast furnaces in steel making and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Dr. Li is also the recipient of the National Science Foundation's Designing Materials to Revolutionize and Engineer Our Future Program Award. NIU is the lead institution collaborating with the University of Michigan and the University of Illinois at Chicago. The project will be used to train and educate the next generation of undergraduate and graduate students with a commitment to developing a workforce that is diverse, equitable, and inclusive, well-equipped for careers as educators and innovators. NIU will be the first R2 university to take the lead on this prestigious National Science Foundation Award. Congratulations to Dr. Li.
That's awesome.
Chair Herrero, thank you for this opportunity to share a few exciting highlights from the research division.
Thank you. Exciting indeed. We now will move to the university reports. Agenda item 7A is the state legislative report, and Ms. Katie Davidson will be giving us providing us with a verbal report. Hey, Katie.
Hello. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
There we go.
Well,
Good morning from Springfield. First, I'd love to welcome Trustee Strong to the RILA committee. I look forward to meeting you in person and working with you. Thank you for the opportunity to provide a brief supplemental report to my written report before you in your agenda packet. We are currently in the final hours of veto session. The General Assembly plans to adjourn this evening. As predicted, no legislation of significant impact on higher education came before the General Assembly during the 2023 veto session. I am working on identifying and developing legislation in support of our 2024 spring legislative agenda. Of top priority for all of the state public universities is the investment in higher education through adequate and equitable funding, along with addressing the growing deferred maintenance challenges facing all of our campuses. This is one of the key messages being conveyed at every meeting with every legislator and state leader that I'm having. Understanding that the work of the Commission on Equitable Public University Funding will not be implemented into the budget-making process in the near future, nonetheless, the impact of the disinvestment in higher education is being highlighted and amplified through that process. Shifting from the legislative activity, I'm also thinking about ways that we can engage with the state. The state is currently working to update its economic development priorities, and I believe NIU is poised to be a key partner in the workforce development initiatives that will be necessary to support those priorities. We have a number of subject matter experts, along with several programs that can be replicated or scaled up as those priorities are identified. I'm working to keep NIU at the top of everyone's mind as a resource, whether when developing policies or making decisions on projects that move the state's various strategies forward. And that concludes my remarks. If you have any questions, I'd love to take those.
Thank you, Katie. Oops. Thank you, Katie. Appreciate the report. Does anyone have any questions for Katie? No questions here. That was pretty clear. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we will go to Agenda Item 7B, Federal Relations Report. Ms. Julia Rowe will provide a verbal report.
Good morning, everyone. I'm happy to join you in person today. There's been a couple significant changes at the federal level since we last met. Starting on the congressional side, on October 25th, Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana was elected Speaker of the House after Representative Kevin McCarthy was removed in early October as Speaker. Moving to appropriations, the government is currently operating under a continuing resolution funding the government at FY23 levels until next Friday, November 17th, when the government runs out of funding. The status of our priorities, including congressional directed funding requests, key programs of interest to higher education and research, remain uncertain. Speaker Johnson has shown interest in passing a continuing resolution going to mid-January, but a final funding package agreement has not been reached, and the status is very fluid as of this morning. On the legislative side, in early October, Representative Virginia Fox of North Carolina introduced the Deterrent Act, which would modify Section 117 of the Higher Education Act, which requires foreign gift reporting for institutions. The bill would lower the reporting threshold from $250,000 to $50,000, require disclosures of gifts to individual staff and faculty, and include penalties for non-compliant institutions. The committee held a markup yesterday, voting the bill out of the committee. This further demonstrates Congress's continued interest and the chairwoman's interest in making changes to Section 117. It's unclear, however, when or if this bill would reach the House floor. On the regulatory side of things, the new FAFSA form, which was mandated under the FAFSA Simplification Act, has been delayed yet again from its October 1st deadline. The department has plans to launch the form sometime in December, but an exact date has not been announced yet. On Title IX, the department has again delayed its final rule on Title IX. The administration plans to implement a second rule finalizing athletic eligibility as well, but timing for both of these is uncertain. On accountability rules, the Department of Education is preparing another regulatory package to give department regulators new tools around accountability. This proposal includes new requirements for colleges to clearly display information on financial aid awards, including the total cost of attendance and net price, and makes changes to transcript withholding rules. On the court side, on February 13th, a judge in the Southern District of Texas ruled that DACA was unlawful, but it fell short of putting an immediate end to the program. Current DACA recipients' status remains unchanged, and they can continue to renew their status as of now. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Julia. Can you tell us a little bit about the proposed changes to the FAFSA and the impact this might have on students?
We don't know what the exact proposed changes will be. We do know that they'll increase. Based on the reformulations under FAFSA, we'll see an increase in the number of students who are eligible for Pell. Unfortunately, this does not go along with an increase in funding for Pell, so more students will be eligible, but Congress will still have to appropriate additional funds to meet that obligation. There'll be formula funding changes for how you calculate net price, or sorry, how families' net prices will change. There's many changes in the formula FAFSA simplification, but we just don't know what they 100% will be until the form is released.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Yep,
Chair Wasowitz.
First of all, welcome. Have we seen you in person before?
Not yet. That was my first in person board.
Now I recognize
you. Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Thank you.
I'm kind of curious as to what's the holdup on FAFSA? Why is that such a big deal? Why would you be holding that up?
The department has not given a reason for the FAFSA withholding. I will say that the student loan, the office that is responsible for the FAFSA changes is responsible for many changes across the department, and that office is severely understaffed. So that is also the office that's responsible for implementing all of the other regulatory financial aid changes that the department's doing. So I think it is truly a staffing issue, and there are not enough bodies in that office in the department to process all of the changes that they'd like to make.
Okay.
Yes, Vice Chair Gales.
Can you give us a little update as to where we are with the loan forgiveness program that was at least presented through the president's office and rejected by the courts at some point, and now we came back out with another iteration of this? Can you tell us who's on first?
So the current the $10,000 and $20,000 flat forgiveness has been struck down by the Supreme Court in June, so that program is completely dead in the water. The Biden administration came out with the SAVE repayment plan, so the administration is trying to take a different bite at this apple by changing current student financial aid repayment options for loans. So I think that's the way that they're going to try to address forgiveness, by getting more students or former students into better repayment plans to have their debts forgiven after 10 to 20 years due to public service loan forgiveness or other programs like that. They're looking to expand those for forgiveness. I doubt that the administration will come out with a blanket forgiveness plan again based off the Supreme Court's decision.
Yes. Trustee Racima.
What have you seen, since you're on the ground there, what have you seen the reaction in Congress been to Mike Johnson being the new speaker? Is there any reaction? Do I have the name right, Johnson? Yeah.
Yes. I think cautious optimism. I think Congress is hopeful that there is a new leader and maybe a new excitement around passing things under his new leadership. He has been speaker for about 2 weeks now, and reading the headlines, his honeymoon phase is over. I think really when we see the government run out of money in the next week, how he handles, I think this next week will be a big testament to his leadership and seeing where the conference wants to go from there.
Because you don't know much about him. He's been kind of the invisible person, and now all of a sudden he's speaker. So I have no idea. Is he pro higher ed? Is he pro education?
I think the higher education community is looking to find that out as time goes on as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're Thank not you. The only one asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions for Julia? If not, apologies for not recognizing your first time being here in person. So welcome again, and thank you for your report.
Thank you. It was great joining all of you.
Thank you. So next we'll go to agenda item 7C, sponsored programs administrative report. And we've got Dara Little providing a report. Thank you.
Okay, good. So thank you, Chairwoman Herrero and Board of Trustees, for the opportunity to present the SPA annual report. And I want to extend my welcome as well to Trustee Strom. As Vice President Harris already indicated, fiscal year 2024 is off to a good start. I am happy to take any questions about this year's first quarter report that you have. But for this verbal presentation, I'm going to focus my remarks on how NIU did for fiscal year 2023, which ended on June 30th. I normally provide the full fiscal year SPA annual report at our August meeting, but for various reasons, we postponed it until today. So I know we have another presentation after this, so I will go as quickly as possible. I timed myself at 8 minutes this morning, so let's see if I can
All right,
do it.
All right, you're on.
All right, next slide, please. I don't know if you can make out the org chart on the slide, but with a new trustee, and for those who may not be familiar, I just wanted to give a little bit of an introduction to Sponsored Programs Administration. We are a Central University office reporting to the Vice President for Research, and we're authorized to submit external funding proposals and accept awards from all of the funding sources on behalf of the university. We are the official contact for the university on administrative award-related matters. Sponsored programs is a pretty general term, but essentially it encompasses all funding other than auxiliary, sales and service, financial aid, and gifts. And we're required to classify these funds by organized research, instruction, and other sponsored activities, which the federal government considers to be the main functions of a university, so that's why we report in those three categories. Our team in sponsored programs covers pre-award, award and contract negotiation, financial post-award, and audits. And each team is led by an associate director, and together we cover the full life cycle of sponsored programs. Next slide, please. So a lot of the activities that we support and cover in sponsored programs is commonly referred to as research administration. And if given the opportunity, I will talk about it. So here I'll talk for a minute. What this means is that primarily we are a transactional office with a focus on supporting compliance, much of which is fiscal and governed through policies and regulations that apply to the proposals and the awards that are under our review. As most of you know, and as we've talked about already this morning, NIU has been experiencing significant growth in external funding. And while I have said it before, it does bear repeating, and that we acknowledge that the staff and SPA have really done a truly remarkable job of keeping pace with both the increase in the volume of proposals and funding, but as well the complexity that we are seeing across the entire grants landscape. That's not necessarily unique to NIU. Some of these complexities come from heightened concerns over research security, conflicts of commitment, subaward monitoring, and safe and inclusive work environments. The breadth of knowledge required to perform the functions that we do and the scope of responsibilities in sponsored programs is extensive. And so before I move into the numbers, I would just like to acknowledge once more the work and the team of my staff. For all that they do to support the external funding that's so important for the university. Next slide, please. So for fiscal year 2023, NIU finished very strong with total sponsored funding of $61 million. This amount includes about $4 million in COVID relief funding, namely gear and some FEMA money that we received last year. At $61 million, this is an increase of 72% of funding since fiscal year 2019. It's about a 22% increase year over year. The number of awards, which is indicated under the fiscal year in the graph, has almost doubled. Research is increasing, up 24% since fiscal year 2019. But as you can see, the composition of our funding, most of our funding is for other sponsored activities. These programs range from public service social support programs to technical testing. They provide important programming to our state and local region that help us fulfill our service mission. However, it also means that the efficiencies, like expanded authorities that are often granted through federal funding agencies to reduce administrative burden on principal investigators and staff, are not realized for us as much as we might like them to be, because often those flexibilities apply to research funding. Next slide, please. So if we look at our funding trends, removing the COVID relief funds, NIU is still experiencing very healthy growth. At $58 million, non-COVID sponsored funding has grown 60% since fiscal year 2019. Of course, I don't want to minimize the COVID funding that has come through SPA in the past few years, because it was very real funding to the university and we are continuing to work with it. Next slide, please. So I know this one may be a little hard to read, but the takeaway here is that across the colleges and university divisions, you can see that the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and Division of Outreach are consistently the top grant-getting areas. The spike that you see there in from 20 to 21 is the COVID relief funding that came in. But notable increases over the year have been seen across the university. College of Engineering and Engineering Technology and Education have experienced over 300% increase since 2019. College of Law, 160%, and outreach has almost doubled. So there really is amazing work going on across the institution by our outstanding faculty and staff, encompassing everything from fundamental research to building the pipe stem line and providing critical supports to our own students. And I think the presentation earlier this morning on the basics is another example of that, and the great work that our faculty are doing. And we continue to see heightened increase in sponsored funding from all areas of the university. Next slide. So I'll pivot away from the funding to show a little bit of the proposal activity as well that we've been experiencing. Consistent with what we would expect with an increased growth, proposal submission activity has also increased since fiscal year 2019. With COVID submissions, the amounts requested has increased about 40%. The number of proposals about 19%. Next slide. Without those COVID-related submissions, again, the amounts requested have also increased about the same, the number of proposals are up a little bit, so really not a big change on the pre-award or the proposal side when we factor in COVID. Of interest, though, is as we look at this, unlike our funding composition, which leans heavily towards other sponsored activities, the composition of the funding that we're requesting is more balanced, with research accounting for a larger share of our request. Research funding is primarily federally funded and is very competitive. Much of the other sponsored activities funds that come through our office are for ongoing programs that are often renewed automatically each year. This is something that we've started to talk about within sponsored programs, and as we continue to think about ways to keep pace with the volume and the complexity. But one of my initial interpretations of this is that while our faculty are pursuing research funding, that more of our time in sponsored programs is spent on other non-research related activities. Next slide. So this last graph is just an illustration of the composition of our funding portfolio by funding source. It's consistent with previous years and with normal sponsored funding patterns. Most of our funding is federal dollars, and that's whether that's received directly from the federal government or indirectly through another entity. But we can see that for fiscal year 2023, the composition of direct state funds has shifted. So we've experienced or received more direct state dollars this past year than we have in some previous years. We are seeing more, you know, state partnerships and programs and awards for those activities coming through. But I would also add that I think the partnerships with the Illinois Innovation Network and some of the funding that's coming through that, that's categorized as state funding, that's probably part of that uptick. Next slide. Oh, so this is just another look, I believe. Let's see, I can't see. Of the composition of the funding that we're receiving from the state. So you can see over the last 5 years, I believe in the black is the portion that the state is giving to us that's federal. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that. And then the red is state. Nope, I had that backwards. My apologies. So the red is federal and the black is state, just that composition. All right. Next slide. So in summary, I assumed I would be able to see. I'm going to come around.
Sponsored proposal and award volume continues to increase with a 72% increase in awards from fiscal year 2019. Federal funds continue to account for most of the sponsored funding, but direct state funding has decreased. SPA is continuing to look for ways to modernize and keep pace with the increased volume and complexity. And of course, if you would like to read more about the awards or proposals discussed here, our annual report is available on our website, and the link is there, and happy to provide that link as well. So with that, that concludes my remarks, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I'll start with one question, which is, so with the year-over-year increases that we've seen in the funding, what would you attribute that growth to in the consistent growth?
State of Illinois.
State of Illinois. Just more availability, more grants.
If not the number, the dollar, the amount. We have some very large grants and contracts that have been coming in for several initiatives. The Illinois Tutoring Initiative, which is an outgrowth of COVID funding. There's another educational consortium partnership. I know VP Provost Ellis Piper could speak to that. That's a very large initiative. The simulation lab over in the College of Health and Human Sciences, another very large initiative. We have seen an uptick in programs funded from Department of Children and Family Services. So, you know, at least anecdotally, the state of Illinois.
And then there's been a particular increase in the outreach, engagement, and regional development. Is this also, these are all the same grants, the ones that you just described would fall into that bucket?
A lot of them are state of Illinois, different from the ones that I just mentioned, but again, state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I will say, when you look at the increase in the OERD funding, since yes. Vice President Katronis isn't here, she has been very intentional in encouraging revenue generation through grants, contracts, and other types of sales and service activities, and I think that's reflected in the funding portfolio.
That's great. Thank you. Other questions?
I was just kind of to piggyback onto what you were saying. So the state, have those dollars always been there and we just didn't apply to them, or are they new? Is it a new pot of gold that the state has that we're now going after?
I have the data in my laptop, but it has been increasing. I can come back to you with a specific percentage, but we have seen an increase over the years in state funding. I mean, over half of our funding portfolio is coming through the state. Again, whether that's direct straight dollars or money they're giving to us from the federal government.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see it just to understand where is the state getting this money that you know, we're now going after.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dara.
Yes, Chair Wasowitz.
So, yeah, thank you for the presentation. I'm curious about both federal and state dollars. How much of that is
coming to us directly, or and how much is being subcontracted to us?
It's about half and half.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And actually, if we pull up that slide, that would show us pretty easily that separation of state funding and federal funding.
Okay.
The money that's coming to us from the state that's federally funded would be subcontracted, and then the money that's the state is just direct.
Mm-hmm. And then who do we mostly subcontract through then when we do this? Are there certain organizations that we work with that are go-tos for us for subcontract?
In terms of the state of Illinois agencies?
Yeah, or Fed. Yeah.
So we receive most of our funds from the Department of Children and Family Services. By far, that's probably the biggest agency. I would say Illinois State Board of Education. Illinois Board of Higher Education, there has been an uptick in funding through that agency in the last couple of years. Haven't had a chance to do a deep dive into what that all is, but we have seen way more partnering with IBHE than we have in the past.
Okay.
Yep, and some Illinois Department of Public Health. Those would be the top four.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And so it's great to see that we're seeing all of these funds come in. I know that when you have like a lot more funds coming in, sometimes it's difficult to spend it all. What is the percentage that we are actually spending down of the grants we receive?
That's a great question. I don't have a hard percentage that I could give you. It is something that, you know, we're looking at internally. You know, I don't want to guess, but if I had to guess, I would say most of our grants we do spend down. We are as intentional as we can be in working with the investigators to spend out those dollars, through being as flexible as we can be within the boundaries to make sure they get those charges onto their grants and facilitating no-cost extensions.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
On the your composition of funding by source, I noticed that the corporate side looks to be 2 to 3, maybe 4 million a year. I'm trying to understand the nature of that type of giving and how we establish relationships with the corporate sector. If you have a couple of examples, are they more local corporate or?
So they're mostly local corporate. I would say that a good portion of that funding is with sales and other types of activities like partnerships that the College of Business has for like their executive MBA programs. An example is we do have some, you know, basic or applied research contracts that we have with, I would say most of them are local companies.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those come out of the College of Engineering. In terms of identifying those partnerships, generally those are either more organic at the department, college, or faculty level, or maybe facilitated through the Office of Innovation.
Dara, maybe for Trustee Strom, who's new, you could give like a little overview of the difference, very short overview of the difference between sponsored projects, fee-for-service, or philanthropy, because corporate money certainly flows in all three of those ways.
Yeah. Sponsored program sales and services, really routine sales of a university business, so sales for maybe student activities, but there may be routine services that a department or college has been set up to do on a routine basis, and so when they bring that fund, those monies in, those are classified as sales and service. Of course, on the gift side, those are, you know, donations, no strings attached. Really philanthropic in nature. Those funds are run through the NIU Foundation and are not included in, you know, the dollars that we present here.
The reason I ask, I mean, there's always movement in this corporate space as well. I'll reference just 3 miles west of campus here. You have the international global company Syngenta that just built its new a national research center there for the development of new technology in agriculture, usually mostly seed technology. The company's based in Zurich, Switzerland. And Dr. Freeman and I attended the open house in late June there. There's a potential partnership, I think, opportunities with a company like that. It works in the ag space, but certainly the issue of sustainability, our prior topic here, is something that squarely fits with that. So I look forward to, you know, working and helping maybe build some of these additional relationships.
Thank you, Trustee Strom. Others, any other questions or comments? No, if not, thank you so much, AVP Little, and thank congratulations you. Again on the award.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move to agenda item 7D, which is another presentation on the alignment with the IBHE's Thriving Illinois Growth Goals. Is that President Freeman?
Yeah, I'm going to talk on behalf of the team, and certainly everyone who's here has a microphone and can chime in if there are questions that others than I can answer. What we thought we would do here is really talk about the piece of the university's interaction with the IBHE that's kind of behind the curtain a lot of the times. We talk to the university about the content, or to the trustees about the content of many of the reports we file related to enrollment, related to equity. You see our budget requests and our academic program reviews. But there is an annual event called the Big Picture Meeting. And I wanted to talk a little bit because that is where NIU alone as a university, our leadership and the IBHE leadership get together to talk about alignment. Next slide, please. And so this big picture meeting has been going on for many, many years, certainly for as long as I've been at NIU. But the nature of it and the focus of it has certainly changed over the course of the past, I'd say, 5 or 6 years. For one thing, the meeting always used to be in person. And when the meeting was in person, it was very, very much focused on budget. And a large part of the day was taken up with the members of the IBHE in a golf cart touring the worst parts of our steam tunnels to justify our capital investment request. Since the advent of the strategic plan for Illinois higher education, A Thriving Illinois, and you can advance to the next slide, please, we have focused a lot of that meeting on talking about how NIU's goals and accomplishments align with the expectations of the State Coordinating Board and the state of Illinois general public, honestly, for our outcomes, and how we fit as an institution within the higher ed ecosystem in Illinois, because the IBHE oversees not only the 12 public universities, but our community college partners, private universities. And so it's been a really positive opportunity. Next slide will actually just activate an animation. There are three pillars of the higher education plan. One is equity, one is sustainability, and one is growth. And we talk a lot with the trustees about our equity outcomes, how we're closing equity gaps, what our retention data look like, how we are committed to serving students. We also talk a lot about financial sustainability, which is the meaning of sustainability in this context, because you see our budget requests, you see our quarterly budgets, you see our capital requests. The third pillar of the IBHE strategic plan is focused on growth and innovation and the link between the universities and the economic well-being of the state. And as we enter the third year of the plan, we're really focusing more on growth. And so that's what I wanted to focus a little bit on in terms of this presentation, because it's something we don't discuss, I think, enough with the trustees. And I'm excited about this opportunity. Next slide. The next slide is actually shows you the agenda from our meeting with the IBHE, which was held on October 17th. And I don't want to scare you, but that was an over 2.5 hour meeting. And so that's why we're not going over everything we talk about in that meeting today, but rather focusing on growth and then maybe winding up a little bit to link what we talked about at the IBHE meeting to the legislative priorities that Katie Davison highlighted in her written report. So if we move forward to the next slide shows the first three of the nine growth strategies for a thriving Illinois. The first growth strategy is taking advantage of the IIN to strengthen our regional focus and connect us to the state. And I think that this board is very, very well aware of how we are using our hub in the Illinois Innovation Network, NICS, the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, to link us to the region and to take advantage of the excellence of our faculty and to build on that strength in terms of teaching, research, and community engagement. And I think in the basics presentation you saw this morning how we're using that to enhance our instructional mission. I will say that since we announced NICS, NICS-related grants have totaled more than $2.7 million, and we see enthusiasm developing across our faculty for collaborative grants and for outreach to corporate partners. And we've seen that mostly in the climate mitigation space in terms of new relationships with insurance agents, but Trustee Strom mentioned a great opportunity to partner with Syngenta and their Global Innovation Center, which is located just in Malta, as we move forward to take more advantage of the IIN. I will also say that the IIN has given us a lot better opportunity to partner with the other public universities, and we're really proud to be part of a logistics center that Governor State is leading, and without the IIN and without the connections of the IIN, Governor State wouldn't be leading that center, we wouldn't be part of it, and the state of Illinois wouldn't have been successful in competing for that grant. When you look at priority two here, it's about establishing a statewide business and employer advisory council to the IBHE so that we have more industry investment in what's going on with curricula and what's going on in higher education and the higher ed pipeline. Our conversation with the IBHE about that was really about helping them understand how we already use corporate advisors at all levels of the university, to colleges, to programs, to the president, and then how leaders from NIU participate in things like the Local Economic Development Corporation to help us attract business to DeKalb. And certainly we've seen success there in the last years with Farrar and Syngenta and Amazon and Heinz. With respect to the third priority on this slide, talking about aligning economic development and higher education strategies, we had many, many examples of this in our conversations, but this board has heard already from Ed Systems how they work to create pathways and connections. You're aware of our P20 network and the work we're doing there to make sure that we're taking and elevating students from across and resources from across the P20 spectrum to come together. And then we have a new relationship that's gotten quite a bit of press with TCCI in Decatur, the University of Illinois Richland Community College, focused on EV preparation. Next slide, please. The first bullet on the next slide is about encouraging high school students to enroll in higher education system to stop out-migration, and I think we've talked to you many, many times about our commitment to access affordability and program quality and the positive effects of programs like Aim High, Rockford Promise, and test-free admissions. With respect to number five, you just heard Vice AVP Little talk about the Early Childhood Access Consortium for Equity. This has been an incredible model that the governor's office and the IBHE helped the public universities, the two-year schools, and employers of early childhood workforce come together and say, how do we bring our resources together? How do we make sure that members of the incumbent workforce can be well served, that the problem across our state for having high-quality childcare can be addressed, and how do we do that without duplicating programs and by encouraging and incentivizing collaboration? And I think, you know, there are two really important parts to bring out from the success of the Early Childhood Consortium for Equity, which is called ECACE. The first is that it was a successful pilot, that it shows that collaboration can work, and that it should be continued to be invested in even as federal funds taper, because it has been such high impact. But also, it is a model for going forward. And the third thing I'd say is we should take the lessons learned from the student voices there and apply them in other contexts. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that when we get to the legislative priorities. In terms of like point six here, we had a lot to say. I think Lori Elsh-Piper, when she went through these slides, had like, you know, 12 bullets on a slide and probably four slides, and it took up a lot of the presentation. Don't have time to mention all of that here, but I think you know that we are very committed to experiential learning across the university, that we are a partner of Braven, one of only about a dozen universities in the country to partner with that organization that has had such incredible impact in helping students prepare for the workforce and get high-quality first jobs. I just came from the Braven Summit, and it was just so amazing to hear the stories of Braven fellows, especially those who were 10 years out and still using what they learned in Braven. And I think you know that we're looking to be more informed by workforce data as we propose new programs. And, you know, certainly the board can expect to see a cybersecurity program coming forward soon that was developed in that way. Next slide, please. There is so much that I could say about enhancing access to educator prep programs, and if I gave the microphone to Lori Elsh-Piper, we would really, really be here all day, because our College of Education has just been a state model in creating programs with different types of on-ramps and off-ramps, and I know that we've had presentations on the way that we've worked with institutions like Elgin Community College and others, and so I know that the board's seen those stories, read them in NIU Today. If they have questions about them, they'll ask them. Certainly, when you look at bullet eight, talking about coordinated transfer pathways across our state between community colleges and four-year schools, we know that the Illinois Articulation Agreement goes a long way, but it only goes so far, and that the best pathways are those that are visible to students early and that are based on deep relationships and deep understandings of how credits transfer. And I know the board has helped us to invest in the credit estimator tool, transfer advisors who are dedicated to that. You voted for a budget that increased the resources that were available to us. We are always trying to build more deep partnerships at community college. And I know the board is also aware that that commitment to transfer extends to just serving the adult learner population better. And we are all aware at the last board meeting we went forward with a relationship with REUP to help bring stopouts back. And much of what we learn about how you help students transfer helps students who are returning with some credit and no degree. And then if you look at point nine, again, we're talking about how private business and the vocational sector can play a better role in meeting the state's workforce needs. And I think we understand that that's not just about career and technical education or CTE informing what goes on at community colleges. It's about figuring out how we talk to companies about what they need. And NIU has been very active and successful in this space with our relationship at Rock Valley Community College with the engineering firms serving the workforce needs of Rockford in the aerospace and manufacturing industries. And that's why we're very, very excited about TCCI and the opportunity to go forward and help the state build the EV industry very well. And then I think that we'll go on to the next slide, which highlights our legislative priorities. And you can see how these are aligned with the goals of the university, with what we're doing to address all of the strategies for the state's strategic plan, Thriving Illinois, and to what comes before the Board of Trustees on a regular basis. I want to look at the first bullet there. This is a legislative priority for all 12 of our public universities. We're asking for adequate, equitable, and stable funding, and we're asking for it with a joint voice. When we talk about adequate funding, we've talked about that when we talked about our budget item this morning. We've learned so much about what it takes to address the needs of students as the result of the pandemic. And while we may not have those federal funds flowing at the same rate, we need to be able to support the services that data show our students need to succeed and reach their dreams. When we talk about equitable funding, there's a lot of work going on at the state level in the Public Funding Commission for, that's focusing on how you distribute the appropriated funds equitably to universities. Their timeline for reaching a recommendation has been extended at least through March. which makes it unlikely that any product of that commission will be applied to this appropriation cycle. And I think we have to think about what that means for our university and others and come up with something that may help us. When we looked at what was done, again, learning from the COVID experience, the IBHE appropriated federal COVID funds using a filter, a distribution formula based on the number of Pell-eligible students. And certainly, we found that to be immensely helpful here at NIU. And then when we talk about stable funding, we are so fortunate right now to have legislators and an executive branch who fulfill their promises to fund us on a timely basis with the amount that was promised. And, you know, that shouldn't sound as remarkable as it does, but having been in Illinois for 13 years, I can tell you that wasn't always the case, which makes me also recognize that it might not always remain the case. And as we think about legislative and policy priorities, taking higher education out of the discretionary pot, finding a dedicated revenue stream, making sure that our funding will persist because the needs of our state and the needs of our student will persist will be important. And, you know, the public university presidents are carrying this message loud and clear to the governor's office and to others. The multi-year capital support, again, we don't need to drive around in a golf cart to see that we have $500 million worth of deferred maintenance on our campus, and that's, you know, not unique to our campus. I just want to say a little bit about the last two bullets. We've talked about transfer pathways enough. I don't think I need to belabor that point here. You know, when we talk about identifying resources for the universities, there's money to be asked for. There's also regulatory relief to be asked for that frees up important resources of people's time and money. And I was just really so encouraged. We were talking to the Faculty Senate about the university's budget situation. And when I say we, really, it was George and Lori who were talking to the Faculty Senate, and I was in the room for another reason. But a faculty member from political science stood up and asked us if we had thought about regulatory relief as a budgetary strategy. And I was like, yes, we have, and we'd like to do more. And this is something that we've been able, as the board knows, to get some progress on through the Legislative Audit Commission, but there's more progress to be had, and I think that's an important message, not only on our campus, where sometimes we make rules ourselves that don't make sense, but also at the state level, whether it's rulemaking or statutory relief. And I think it's so amazing that our faculty recognize this as an important priority. And then the last bullet is really about more flexibility for the Monetary Assistance Program and Aim High. You know, people don't always realize this, but Pell Grants allow the recipients much more flexibility in how they use those funds than the MAP grants do or than our Aim High does. And that is, Pell Grants can be applied to things that are related to the total cost of attendance, whereas MAP and Aim High can only be applied to tuition and fees. And, you know, I said earlier, we should carry forward the lessons we learned from COVID and from ECACE, the Early Childhood Consortium. And when we heard from the Early Childhood Consortium scholarship recipients at the last IBHE meeting, they talked about the flexibility of the scholarships that they were awarded being the key factor in their success. The fact that it wasn't just that tuition and fees were supported, but that transportation could be supported, that childcare could be supported, that they could buy pizza for their children when they were studying. These are the things that help them to succeed. We know from COVID on our campus how important the residential component of university life at NIU is to students, and not because it provides luxurious facilities or, you know, a lazy river or a climbing wall. Anyone who's been in our residence halls knows they're not luxurious, and we don't have any of those amenities. But what we do have is good internet. What we do have is a learning community where students are surrounded by people who share their academic goals. What we do have is good access to the writing center and to tutoring and to faculty. And if you looked into the homes of many of our students during COVID, you know that their home environment has a lot of distractions and often not those critical things. So thinking about expanding the flexibility of grants that our students are already getting so that they can use them to cover books, so they can use them to cover transportation, whether it's to campus or to clinicals. I think that's an important message that we can carry forward, that we'll just align the resources that are already being dedicated to students to their real needs and to their chances of success. And so that kind of summarizes sort of the conversations we have at these meetings, the IBH meetings, and at the big picture meeting, and how those come together to inform our legislative priorities and to help us really align higher education across the state of Illinois in a way that NIU can play a role in the ecosystem and the ecosystem can support our state. So I'll stop there, and I hope this glimpse behind the scenes was helpful for the trustees.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dr. Freeman. I have to say, as a member of IBHE, this is like music to my ears as you use, you know, the IBHE framework and really like frame our priorities using that framework too. So that's great. So I'm sure our new chair, Chair Kathari, would also be quite pleased. I have two questions for you, which are very different questions. So one is, you mentioned the regulatory reforms, and I guess I would ask you, like, if you could wave a wand, which one reform would you like to see? And then the second question, as everybody kind of laughs at that, that's okay, but I'd like to hear one. And then my other question is, there's an ongoing debate, right, about Aim High, and that is Aim High or MAP, right? Because MAP does provide students with quite a bit of flexibility. So what, from your perspective, why Aim High and not more MAP?
Let me take the Aim High MAP question first. While I challenge the Chief Strategy Officer, Provost, and CFO to quickly caucus and come up with which of the many procurement reforms we would like would be our top priority. You know, So MAP can only be used for tuition and fees. The flexibility that's built into MAP is that students can take it with them to any institution. Aim High comes to the institution, and the institution decides within the Aim High framework how to award it to students. Initially, there was some concern that Aim High would be merit-based and result in a lack of diversity, and I think NIU has been a leader in the state in showing that Aim High can build an incredibly diverse class by matching talent with opportunity using the Aim High framework. When we talk about MAP versus funds that go to the university, it's very easy for the public to say we want to empower students to make choices and give them MAP. At the same time, we turn around and say to the universities, we know our students are naive and they don't have the information they need always to make smart choices, so you need to build better networks and advising structures and wraparound services to help them. And so there was a saying that I heard during the budget impasse in someone's testimony, and I can't remember who, but it is that MAP is the saddle and the public universities are the horse. And so if you starve the public university, whether it's operational funds or whether it's funds for institutional aid so that they can leverage those funds in a way that will really help students succeed, because a student that doesn't understand what a FAFSA is or how to fill it out is not necessarily going to make good choices in terms of understanding how discount rates work or how to plan their budgets or how to tell their narratives in the best way for scholarships. We have an incredible amount of institutional data at our fingertips that helps us decide how to deploy aid in ways that optimize a student's chance of not only getting to and through, but perhaps having some time to participate in activities because they have enough support for the cost of attendance that they might not have to work a second or a third job. And so I feel like it's easy to sell just more MAP, more MAP, more MAP, but I'm not sure that makes our educational ecosystem as effective as it could be, because MAP is so divorced from the knowledge, data, and services that the universities have to help students. So I think we need to be very intentional with the aid dollars in our state and giving students freedom to deploy it for things that will really help them. And institutions, a constructive voice in saying, we know how we can deploy funds in ways that will allow students at our institution to succeed. Please let us have a voice in that. And now, I feel like I should run up with an envelope or, you know, we should have like the masked singer on man.
I feel like we were actually, I felt like we were actually playing Family Feud and we were getting ready to steal the, it's very simple. One word, capital or CDB, whatever you want to, you know, we need more flexibility to get our buildings built and our deferred maintenance taken care of. And that was less than a 8-second conversation the three of us had.
It is, yep.
Thank you. Yes, Trustee Butler.
Where's the flexibility? Where's the locus of withholding that flexibility? Is it at the CDB or
It's really at the CDB, John. I mean, my experience is the more bureaucracy that you have to go through to access the funds that have already been awarded to you, does two things. One, right, it defers the maintenance problems that you have, and we have examples of that on this campus. If we just look outside the window and see the shower cap on the College of Law, that's an example of that money not being freed up in a timely manner to allow us to be able to address real concerns. The other issue, though, is costs, right? Costs aren't going down in anything. And the longer that we wait to be able to address those issues, the less we're able to address, because the state doesn't increase the money based on inflation. They awarded you this amount, and 5 years later, you get a lot less money to do with what you need to do.
I will also say that, speaking on behalf of some of my colleague universities, the delays that have been related to staffing turnover at the CDB and or the CDB managing projects on campuses that are very distant from them, that they're not familiar with, have resulted in some things that really impact students very negatively. Elevators that have been taken out of service only to be discovered that they can't be put back in service in time for the semester to start. Sidewalks that have been chopped up, and then utility diagrams being found to be imperfect, staffing delays coming, things not getting fixed, and now you have paths to buildings where students need to go that students can't cross. And we are lucky that we've had less of that on our campus than some other campuses had. Having local control wouldn't solve all those problems, but those problems, when they arose, if they arose, would be solved a lot faster, and there would be a sense of urgency that was student-centric.
Thank you. Other questions from the trustees? Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Moon. That was really very informative. And now I've lost my place on the agenda here. Where am I? Sorry, give me 2 seconds here. Okay, I got it. I meant other matters. Are there any other matters requiring the attention of the board today? If hearing none, we'll move on to the next meeting date. The next meeting of the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee is February 15th, 2024. Next, we'll move to adjourn the meeting. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Madam Chair Gales.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gales. May I have a second?
Second Moore.
Thank you, Student Trustee Moore. Rachel, will you please call the roll call?
Committee Chair, Vice Chair Athas?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Committee Chair Veronica Herrera?
Yes. Thank you. This meeting is now adjourned. This concludes the Research, Innovation, Legal, and Legislative Affairs Committee meeting. Thank you.